The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. This content is created in partnership with our sponsor, Zurich Australia Limited, ABN 92000010195, AFSL 232510, and is limited to publicly available information. Before acting on any general advice, you should consider whether appropriate and obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license and does not provide any financial advice or services or endorse any general advice. If a PDS or IM exists, you should obtain a copy and review it thoroughly before making a decision.
Welcome to the Life Insurance Podcast for Ensemble. I'm your host, Ben Donald, Managing Director of Life Advice Partners and currently completing a doctorate in life insurance. My goal is simple, improving life insurance outcomes for Australians. This podcast series is all about bringing life insurance back onto the radar for advisors across the country. Each episode features real conversations with the people who live and breathe this work every day, uncovering the lessons, processes, and the stories that help advisors lift confidence, capability, and client outcomes. Whether you write two policies a year or 200, this podcast is here to help you deliver better protection, build stronger businesses, and ultimately serve more Australians. Let's jump in.
Zurich is proud to be supporting this episode. Experience Zurich and OnePath advisor portals with new and improved digital capabilities and an enhanced range of self-service functionality, helping make your business more efficient, saving you time and removing complexity. It's everything you need in one place. Partner with us today.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Ensemble Life Insurance Podcast. Today, I'm joined by an old contact, an old friend of mine who I've known for a very long time and has recently moved into a very senior role, Mr. Aaron Zoll. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Ben.
Mate, thanks very much for coming on to the podcast. And I really want to dive straight into this, mate, because I think there's a lot that I really like to unpack. And a lot of that's based on the experience that you've had. I think most advisors out there, when they talk to, for example, an insurance BDM, or if they talk to a fund manager BDM, that insurance BDM may have been, you know, with a few different companies. You've got guys like Kylie Abbott and Rob McNeil who've been in their companies for forever and a day. But ultimately, a lot of them stick to the one industry. Similarly with advisors, you've got some that are holistic, but then you'll have a large majority as well that I think that specialize in either life insurance or aged care or superannuation or whatever it may be. But your backstory, I think, probably has given you the largest exposure to every type of varied advice practice that exists in Australia, mate. Can you, not in 30 seconds, maybe a couple of minutes, can you tell me where it all started, mate?
Yeah, well, I was fortunate enough to get a job at CBA and on a grad program, went through an interview process, and grad programs are awesome because you get exposure to a few different teams. I spent 6 months in four different roles, and probably on my second rotation, I was in a phone-based financial planning team called Advice Essentials. From memory, I think Michael Savis, Matt Brown built that back in the day, and Adrian Quah ran it for a period of time when I was a grad there, and hey, end-to-end process exposure to all the widgets, nuts and bolts of a financial planning business, but effectively condensed down to try and service what Commonwealth Bank would call their C's and D clients, and not dissing those type of clients. They just wanted to be able to offer a lower cost service to people who needed advice, but couldn't necessarily afford to pay a senior financial planner. So that team did a lot of insurance advice, and they did basic superannuation retirement planning stuff, but they were offering SOAs for about $150. And
yeah, well,
I got to process map the whole end-to-end advice process. We'll probably get to this about life experience and stuff. I think that process map ran for about 5 or 6 A3 pages. There's a lesson in that. I think simplicity is better than complexity. If you can make the complex simple, and you'll see that throughout the theme of what we're talking about today, if you make the complex simple, I think it resonates better with people. But yeah, did a rotation there. That's where I met Matt Brown.
Yeah, just as you go, and you mentioned Matt Brown again, mate. You mentioned the grad program, right? Now, from what I understand, there is about 10,000 applications for that, and I think 20 people got the job.
Oh, I think in Colonial there would have been a couple of hundred, then 3 got the job.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's always highly competitive, but that's why you apply to all the banks.
And just going off your youthful face, when was that, 2-3 years ago?
Yeah, that was about right. We'll go with that. Now, it was about 2011.
Yeah.
So 2011, what's that, 15 years ago. So did 2 years of CBA, finished up at the CBA on their grad program, got this. I thought it was quite an incredible opportunity to work with a dealer group at ANZ, which was called Financial Services Partners. Matt Brown tapped me on the shoulder. He said, look, I think you'd be great in this role. It was a business manager role, so it was a bit of a jack of all trades, but put me at the center of a relatively small, I'd call it boutique licensee owned by a large institution that was struggling to find its identity in a large group. It was going backwards, and the challenge there was to try and turn the business around and re-engage the advisors, recruit more advisors, and really build culture and momentum and promote the value of advice within the ANZ group. I think we did about 5 years there, and we took the business from about 130 ARs to almost 190, which was a big tick. It was awesome. 5 years in a role, you kind of get itchy feet. I had a honest chat with Matt and said, look, I'm ready for the next thing. What can I do? And funnily enough, two things. Rob McNeil, you mentioned before, I had a chat with him about becoming a BDM in the insurance space. And I also had a chat with Tusha Kale, who was he kind of ran FSP and M3s as a 2IC, about a practice coach role in Millennium 3, which is another licensee that ANZ owned. And the attraction to that was being able to get into advice businesses, understand their process, understand the friction points, and try to collectively work on improving their advice productivity, efficiency, and remove friction from the system. That's where I got to meet Austbrokers Life. So I took that role and I sat in that role for about 3 or 4 years working with Millennium 3 advisors, and I got to see risk-only businesses like Austbrokers Life, got to see, you know, businesses that were specialized in financial planning, retirement, and everything through the spectrum from small 1AR startups right through to large corporatized businesses. That was a really great learning curve. Going into a business, coming in and trying to add value and make a difference, you learn a lot about advice and advice process. You learn a lot about people and culture, and you learn what good businesses do well and what other businesses don't do so well. And it's not always easy identifying the root causes of where businesses can improve. But, you know, there's, as we go through that, I'm sure we'll unpack it. But that was a great learning exercise for me. And then was fortunate enough, again, Matt Brown tapped me on the shoulder.
I'm sensing a theme here. Yeah. Obviously, he's looking for another promotion.
Got a tap on the shoulder. Out of his non-solicitation period, of course, and went across to Australian Unity, and that was more of a national role, but it was effectively a practice development manager role.
Advisors are constantly improving, learning from other experts or their peers, reading content. Make that growth count at cpdcheck.com.
So I worked with the Australian Unity business from April 2019 right up until 1 December 2023 when we were acquired by Fortnum, which is now collectively known as Entirety, which is where we are today. So, and in that business, I was operating as a PDM, took carriage of about 45 practices, self-employed advisors, again, ranging in size from 1AR through to large corporates. I was very fortunate, got an opportunity to actually manage a team of senior financial advisors. So the Australian Unity business had an employed channel, and in that we had, I think, collectively about 1,500 ongoing service clients and about 18 advisors. And I had a team of four, two in Sydney, two in Canberra, and an associate in Sydney. That was awesome. My first crack at leadership and managing a team of advisors, all very different personalities, but are some of the best I've worked with.
Ensemble Progress is for advisors who want real momentum, not just inspiration. Find out more at ensemble.com/membership.
So how quickly did it collapse then, if you're in charge?
To be honest, it was challenging. I remember coming into the gig in Canberra, I had three advisors. A week before I started, one had resigned. Mm. A week after I started, another had resigned. And I was down to my last one, who, Jerry Vermeulen, you probably know him. He's a great advisor, great human. And I just said to him, mate, are you in or are you out? Let me know. And he's like, no, I'm in. And I go, mate, I really need your help here because I'm not an advisor. And work with me and let's make a difference. And I go, what's your main problem and what's your main challenge? And he goes, well, there's 180 clients I think he was looking after, and there's a whole heap of C-class clients, actually more than that. There was a whole heap of C-class clients. I think we had about 60 clients that were paying us 110 grand in aggregate revenue. And I'm like, well, that doesn't make sense. Okay, went to Matt and Michael at Australian Unity. Go, what's the appetite to sell these? We found a partner business in Canberra who was happy to acquire it. They were happy for the cash flow, and we just arranged, I guess, good terms for them, so they didn't have to put the cash up front. We could accrue it, and they could buy it over 2 years. It worked out. It put capacity back in our system to point into the right type of clients, and it gave them probably a client that they could service at a lower cost profile than we could, being a larger corporate employed channel, and it worked well. It was a win-win-win. managed to hire an awesome advisor in Laura Mance. And we grew from there. I think we really turned that business around in 2 years. And then fast forward to 1 December 23, Fortnum acquired PFS alongside AZNGA, who acquired the Employed channel, and have integrated that into Nestworth, which is a phenomenal business. It's a national business, but its head office is in Southeast Queensland. CEO is Helen Blackford. And so, yeah, that's been the progression. My role sort of went back to predominantly PDM. And looking after the 45-odd practices, including some Fortnum practices, which is great because some amazing businesses in the Fortnum network that I've got to know and work alongside. And here we are today. It, fast forward, and the organization, when I talked to a bit of strategy, was looking at an opportunity to step in to into the insurance space. If you think about the legacy of Entirety, when Entirety effectively was founded in about 1 July 2024, which is the collective of PFS and Fortnum. We never set out to be the biggest. The opportunity to acquire AMP came up, and it made sense. It was a natural fit, and it accelerated our growth ambitions and also accelerated what we're trying to do as an organization, which is be the chosen financial services provider to financial advice businesses. We have licensee businesses, but we don't see ourselves as a dealer group. We think those models are dead. We're trying to wrap ourselves around financial advisors and collectively with scale get them a better deal. And with that size, I think we're number one in the market now. We never set out to be number one, but with that size, I think comes a corporate and also a community obligation. We know there's a chronic underinsurance problem in Australia. We know a lot of advisors have been stepping away for it, probably for the right reasons, and we can unpack those today. But I think we want more Australians to get access to more advice, and we feel like if not us, who's going to do it? So I'm really proud to be part of this group, and I'm proud to be afforded the opportunity to step into this role and lead it. But we want to lead the change in this space. We want to turn the dial in insurance in Australia, and we want to make it more accessible to more Australians. And collectively solve the challenges that we're facing this industry and start building that new business. And that's why we have, as a group, coined our Beacon on the Hill 10,000 lives, which is 10,000 new lives per annum we're looking to get into insurance advice, as well as our Road to 200, which is from a productivity and capacity lens, giving advisors the opportunity through smart process enabled through good technology to be able to service 200 ongoing service clients if they choose. And that's up from ratios of anywhere between 90 and 120 today.
Mate, that's 10,000 new lives. It really is a really nice line and something beautiful to work towards. So 15 odd years looking at one man bands, giant corporates, all the rest of it, and you're going to take those 15 years worth of lessons, and you're effectively now, what is Entirety Life? Like, what are you looking to do?
Yeah, so I'd say there's two key components to Entirety Life. I've been the beneficiary of what Ben Climo, who was formerly at AMP and Acumen, has created in that network, which is what we call Component One. He's put a lot of work into building a risk community, and we'll leverage that into Fortnum and PFS as well. We want to help advisors build capacity, capability, and confidence back in insurance advice. And we know we can collectively do that with the help of our key partners, the insurers. There's alignment of purpose there, as well as our own network and community of advisors who are active in this space and specialize in it. We see the value of insurance advice, but we know that, you know, confidence comes from continual working in that space. Whereas if you're kind of dabbling, it's a bit easy to trip up. So
yeah, I liken it to the pilot. I'd much rather my pilot does 1,000 hours a year than maybe 10 or 20.
I think it's 10,000 hours.
Yeah, whatever it is. Either way, I'm still here, touch wood.
Yeah. So that in terms of what we're trying to drive is a body of work into uplifting capability, confidence, and capacity amongst our network. We think that'll drive a lion's share to that 10,000. Call it a risk renaissance, which is a Ben Climo-ism. but there's a role to play in that. There's a role to play in us influencing insurers around embedding sensible tech, which is we've been a strong advocate of LifeBid. And Brett Wright as the founder of that business, we see that as a game changer. Certainly on the capacity side of the lens, we really want to embed that because we think you can service a lot more clients using smart tech. As I said earlier, smart process enabled through good technology, and that is a classic example. We know the industry's fragmented. All the life houses have their own legacy system. Some more modern, some older. And then you've got this beast in the center called Xplan. Not dissing Xplan, it's a very good tool when it comes to doing your risk quotes and research and whatnot. It's just a little bit clunky when it comes to managing renewals. So we believe LifeBid will go a long way to solving that capacity problem in a business and improving customer service in that space. If I fast forward, that second phase category of life, Entirety Life, is all about us building the engine at the center. So taking the 15 years of collective experience of myself plus my colleagues and peers and weighing heavily on people like Sean Shaw from Austbrokers, who are natural guns at this stuff, to help me avoid the pitfalls, but building a life capability. And there's two lenses to that. It's going to advisors, we can do it with you or we can do it for you. But, you know, I don't think you can sit silent and stand on the fence anymore. There's a need and you either do it or we'll do it for you. And that's not a threat. That's us opening the doors to say, we want to be a trusted referral partner and we want you to refer if you don't want to do it. Let us take that risk off your books, literally.
Yeah, I think the market's to the point now where there doesn't really exist any competition in life insurance advice anymore. You know, similar to yourself, mate, more than happy to talk to anybody and help anybody build a business or refer or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And so can I ask, again, I just want to harp on this, mate. This is really something quite special. Your unique experience dealing with so many businesses. So 15 years, right? And you now have the backing of effectively the largest licensee group. Is it, I don't know, 1,500 advisors or?
Well, it's about 1,100 if you include Acumen, PFS and Fortum. So they're the licensee.
I think, you know, there's 13% of the market, and fast forward a month or might be.
Andy Marshall and the Alliances business has another 450. Yeah. So
all that experience, all these advisors, and you genuinely, my view would be that with 10,000 more lives and the number of advisors that you have, you are one of the few businesses in the country that could genuinely move the dial on how much new business is being written.
Yeah.
You've got all this experience. You've got exposure to all these risk specialists inside Entirety already, and you've got a blank canvas. Mate, how terrified are you? Like, this, it's exciting and terrifying at the same time, right? Like, what?
What's the saying? Fake it till you make it.
Yeah. 15 years later, still here. So it's working out all right, mate.
Hopefully, fingers crossed. Oh, look, we've certainly, if you reflect on conversations we've had with the insurers, I mean, they're all in. They see this as alignment of purpose. They love the notion of 10,000 new lives. It's injecting new lives to the system. We know the insurance industry is sitting at, what, 330 odd mil of new business?
Yeah, correct.
And if you speak to people like Brett Wright, he says it has to be up closer to a bill. So 10,000 lives isn't going to solve that problem in of itself. But if we can take a leading position and start moving the dial, then, you know, I think it'll be self-perpetuating. There is value in insurance advice. And we don't have to do it all through personal advice, but that's the lens in which we're applying to this conversation.
Can I ask, mate, so, and again, for every kind of advisor that's listening at the moment, with the experience that you have across the hundreds of practices that you've worked with, what are sort of the lessons that you can see? So practices that are engaging with risk genuinely or generally a little bit more successful or less successful? Is it the focus practices? What have you seen?
It's a good question, because there's not one model that trumps any other. In all these businesses, and you've got to remember, a lot of them, the majority of them are self-employed businesses, and they'll have different goals and success measures for their own business. But if I reflect on businesses with insurance, at a corporate scale, they're the ones that are doing 40%+ EBIT. I've seen a lot of large corporate businesses that sit with EBITs around the 30%. I think 30 to 35% EBIT for a large corporate financial planning business is a good, attainable, sustainable profit number. But if I reflect back on the business I've worked with, the ones that get over 40 are often the ones with large risk components. I think risk is easier to service on an ongoing basis. And I think there's obviously a lot less work to do from an ongoing basis. There's not that regulatory obligation to do ongoing service. Noted, pretty much every risk business I've ever worked with will service clients ongoing. I don't know a business that doesn't do ongoing renewal and review work with their clients, but you don't have that mandated ongoing service obligation. So I think from a profitability perspective, once you get to scale, those risk businesses are highly profitable.
Yep. So with the insurers, you mentioned before that they've all been really excited with the alignment of purpose. What are some of the things that they're looking to do with you?
Good question. Look, some of them have orphan client books. Some of them have clients that they have a general advice channel that can service, but when it gets to that higher purpose personal advice need, they're looking at genuine options. And they're looking at a group like Entirety because we're not institutionally aligned. We are owned by our advisors and management, and our belief, we're an advice business first and foremost. We don't have that product lens, so there's no conflict there from a product perspective. So we act in the best interest of our clients and ultimately look to give them the right advice. So there's that lens there. But from an Entirety Life perspective, what we're really looking to gain support from the insurers is their education, their knowledge. I mean, I'm going to go on a fact-finding road trip in the first quarter of this year, sitting down with the insurers as well as our own advisor peer groups, and really lift the bonnet up on what are the key friction points, where are advisors tripping up in the process, and where are things not connecting? Because if we're genuine about improving capacity, improving confidence and capability, we've got to remove the friction from the system. And equally so, turning the lens on ourselves, that also means looking at our own compliance standards. We've got 6 different licensees, Acumen, PFS and Fortnum. Acumen has 3 licensees, Fortnum's got 2 and PFS on its own. And they've all got separate compliance manuals. Look, they overlap probably by about 85-90%. But between those compliance manuals, there is at times uncertainty about how rules are applied and interpreted. And I think we can do better at clarifying those. And that's part of what we aim to do. So if we can provide greater clarity and certainty around the compliance requirements, we don't apologize for them. You got to remember where life insurance came from, and that that report 413 that ASIC released into the quality of insurance. A lot of that stuff, in my read of it, fell over on just poorly documented advice. I wouldn't say the advice necessarily was bad, but in most cases, the documentation wasn't there. So a lot of the compliance structure is really there to help ensure advisors are dotting their I's, crossing their T's. You said they've got a risk needs analysis of X. In your SOA, you've gone with Y. Why the difference? It's not hard. That's not saying that that's wrong. It's we reduced it because X, Y, Z, and the client understood the risk and they're willing to accept it. Bang, you're covered.
Yeah.
But you got to have that level of rigor in your file.
So that capability that you're building for Entirety Life, is that rolling out to the advisors as well?
The capability for Entirety Life. So if I call that component 2, which is effectively we're looking to build an employed channel.
Yeah.
What we want to roll out to advisors, this is to do it with them. If an advisor wants to give advice on insurance, and I don't think you have to train advisors how to position insurance. Advisors have been doing it for years. It's more about once they've done the insurance advice, handling all the administrative implementation work off the back of that, we'd like to step in and help advisors with that, take that capacity off their plate and do that on scale. The other side of it is helping them manage renewals and reviews as they come up, if we can help them. We've already got a great team in the Philippines through Vital Business Partners, or a key partner of ours. Yvonne Chu in our business runs a great admin service, Practice Essentials. We've got a dozen practices already using it now. So it's beyond pilot phase. It's a live business, and they tap into those services daily. And we take processes off businesses, not tasks, but actual processes. So annual renewals, review pack generation. It's a stone's throw to throw in insurance renewals. So if we can take that sort of stuff off of practice, then they can lean in and use our services. And hopefully we can do it better, faster, cheaper, and they can repoint that capacity into more productive and value add tasks in their business. So that's an example of do it with them. The do it for them is the practice has said, Aaron, I just don't really want to step into advice. It's not my bread and butter. I kind of do it sporadically if I have to. That's where we'll talk to them about a genuine relationship, referral relationship. And in part, some clients, when I say clients, I talk about advisors. Some of my advisors will genuinely go, look, I don't really want the risk book anymore. You know, as it starts to get older, dealing with claims management, which is becoming a specialist area, you got to know what you're doing in that space. Dealing with renewals, dealing with clients who are complaining about premium increases, and it becomes more of a distraction. That's where we can step in. We've got capital. We can step in, and if they're willing to sell and they want to sell, then they're selling to a safe business partner.
Yeah, good pair of hands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And on the flip side, if there's a financial planning need that comes out of that relationship, well, we know where the book came from. We can refer the financial planning need back to the advisor to be serviced because we're not stepping into that space.
Okay. So with the friction points then, what is it so far that you've seen? I know you've yet to commence SWAT, but I imagine you've already made quite a few phone calls, and, man, you've got 15 years worth of experience to lean on there. Yeah. What's some of the key friction points that you're looking to address?
I reflect on a conversation I had with Scott Hoger at Tao, actually.
Yeah.
I just I think you mentioned to me in passing that something like at TALV, 70% of applications go in force. Now, don't quote me on that. Don't beat me up if I'm wrong on that one, Scott. But it all comes down to field underwriting and pre-assessing. If you look at what good insurance businesses do well, all the specialists pre-assess. They don't put anything past that first meeting unless there's a pre-assessment accompanying it. And the art of field underwriting's probably been lost. So there's a role to play in helping upskill advisors who want to do it, the ones that are currently dabbling in it but want to do more of it to get better at field underwriting and pre-assess. That would be one of my hot tips. I remember Sean, even yourself, I remember we worked together, pre-assess everything. And I'll never forget what you said, lean into that conversation. It can be uncomfortable asking a woman their height and weight in that first meeting, but it's a good way to build trust and rapport pretty quickly. And I think at the envy of some of the financial planning advice conversations, the insurance guys probably build that trust and rapport faster, given the nature of the questions they're asking.
And that's a recurring theme that we have with basically every advisor we talk to. As you say, if you lean into the difficult conversations, you build a stronger relationship much, much faster.
There's always going to be the unknown unknowns, and you can't avoid that. But I think when we're looking at the Austbrokers model, which I'd hang my shingle on as one of the better businesses I've certainly worked with, those guys were running 90% application to enforce, whereas you take a retail insurer like TAL who said 70%, you know, a big part of that to play is we can help the advisor bridge that gap, which improves the outcome for TAL and all insurers alike, but improves the outcome for clients and advisors, better managed expectation, less friction in the system. It's a win-win-win.
Okay. So, mate, looking at one-man band versus large corporates, right, and this isn't necessarily about life insurance that we're talking about, but what are some of the key similarities and differences? Like, what are some of the keys to success? If you're a one-man band, should you be following the same process as a large corporate, or should you be doing the, you know, Picasso one-on-one style?
The advice process doesn't change in generations, but the processes it applies to a practice will always be tailored. And the reason for that is every practice is different. They've got different staff doing different things. I mean, like I said, I spent 5 years workflowing threads in X-Plan for businesses, and ultimately the process didn't zipper much.
Like, the exhilaration's coming off you in waves when you talk about that. That's just
threads.
Skip that.
Threads. But so the process doesn't change all that much, but who does the step in the process may change. And if there's one lesson I can tell any practice is don't overcomplicate it. I've done that before, and you spend a whole bunch of time building the threads to the nth degree, trying to factor in every possible permutation and change. No one ends up using it. Keep it simple. Build it with the business. So get the people using the thread involved. My personal tip is engineer out the advisors altogether. They're not process people. Some are. I won't generalize, but I will generalize.
Yeah.
In general, they're not process people. Yeah. But if you got good process people in a practice, tie them into the process and get them to help you build it. Keep it simple, and then just use checklists for all the minutiae, the dotting I's, crossing T's, and have a DIY or have a process manual in your office. Like, now with the advent of Teams, and a lot of people have offshore staff, like in the Philippines, VBP have been very successful supporting a lot of our practices. The likes of Fiverr, VA Platinum, they're all in this space. When you're recording trading sessions over Teams, hit the record button. You're building your service manual and how to run your business, and you're reducing key person risk. So record your Teams meetings with your staff and get the AI copilot to document the process. It's pretty straightforward. But yeah, so small business comes down to what they want. I've worked with one AR operators that run 60% profit margins and do everything. There's no handover points, so they're super efficient because they do everything from the meeting to the review, the pre-assessment, the fact find, the risk research, you're into advice.
A little bit of key man risk there.
A lot of key man risk. But then I've seen large corporate businesses, they have all these handover points, but they're still key man risk because it's like everything sits at the one, everything needs to be approved by one person, and there's almost a dependency or trust issue there. And that actually comes back to one of the points. One of the best businesses I've seen that's corporatized, take Jake Roos down in Engadine at Bob Roos & Co. Those guys have revamped their whole business and moved from a sort of a pool structure to a pod structure. And there's no right or wrong there. But they've built really good culture in their business. And what that means is you walk into a meeting with Jake, you're walking into a meeting with, I think he's 14 or 15 staff. Everyone's present and everyone's engaged. So everyone has an accountability piece there. And I really love working with businesses that lean in, as opposed to just working with maybe the director or advisor, and not so much their staff, because they become absent from the conversation. I think they miss that ownership and accountability, especially when you're talking process, which is the lifeblood of a business.
Yep.
So,
yeah. Okay. Mate, switch gears again just quickly. I just want to ask, so you mentioned before about the pre-assessment being vital,
mm-hmm.
systems and processes being vital. What other things, anything to do with claims management, what's entirely got going on there?
Claims management is a space that we haven't necessarily, we don't own an active claims management service. We've got support from key partners. I know there's in Fortnum and PFS, we use Cole Fulliger.
Hmm.
He's been awesome.
I'll interrupt you there, sorry, but I 100% would support those statements. I've used him a number of times, and every single time I've come up with a brilliant outcome for the client.
Yes.
He's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
If people, in fact, can we, Kieran, put a link up to his website on there, mate? His Integrity Resolutions, I think it is.
Yep.
Yeah. Sorry.
And then in Acumen, there's Paul Pavlik introduced me to a guy named Trevor Battersby, which is TBD Claims Assist, and he's been supporting some of the Acumen networks and I think getting really good outcomes as well. What you need is, as I call it, I'd call it the Entirety 11 or the Oceans 11. You need your bench strength, right? And there are elements of this part that we can either partner with, we can build our own capability, or we can buy capability.
Hmm.
In claims management, I think it's JVing and partnering with the right people to deliver that capability and service, because, I mean, just speaking to Trev and Cole, I know they've gotten claims across the line that were initially declined.
Yeah.
And that is a great outcome for the client and the advisor who's connected, right? So,
yeah, we often talk as advisors and why an individual should stay inside and work on risk advice is when you manage a couple of claims and you continue to talk to the client all the way through to payment when potentially it might not have been paid otherwise. That's a really powerful lesson and a really powerful motivator to stay inside life insurance. And I've had recently, I think I did a $3 million one with Cole where something was going on for about a year and we got that paid and the tears over the phone.
It's a high stress environment.
Yeah. I think Sam Pereira was here last week and there's no bigger reward, I think, internally when doing with life insurance, when getting something across the line for a claim for a client that otherwise wouldn't have happened.
When I talk to people about getting insurance advice, granted I'm not an advisor, I always say the best outcome is you pay these premiums for the life of the policy and you get nothing for it.
Mm.
I go, what do you mean? I go, well, you didn't have to claim. You're healthy, you're fit.
Look, I wouldn't mind a skin cancer, maybe just a tiny little skin cancer. I think they used to call trauma Ferrari insurance. So I've still got my little Hyundai XL or whatever it is. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I hope you don't for your sake, mate.
Thanks, mate. So a couple of quick fire questions, mates. I can't say shits and giggles, but I just did. Mate, some of the developments with life insurance, tax deductibility, what are you guys doing on that?
Yeah, so Yvonne Chu, our head of technical, has written a paper on it. We're all for, obviously, tax deductible's fine if it's paid sort of by an invoice outside of super.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, income protection outside of super, the premium's tax deductible, but the advice pertaining to that, if you're charging a fee for advice, this isn't the commission, the fee for advice.
Yep.
It's tax deductible if it's out of super, but then also things like, it's an apportionment thing. If you're talking to the client about the benefit and the tax implications of a life benefit TPD trauma, then a portion of that fee can be tax deductible. Ah, Steve, I go, rule of thumb, she goes, oh, the ones that are doing, and there aren't many, probably between 10 and 25% of the fee is tax deductible.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is that do two statements of advice, one with income protection with the entire fee and the other one for free. Okay, excellent. Mates, anything else that you think we'd sort of want to cover?
Yeah, in my journey, I've worked closely with the guys over in Perth, Oakmont.
Yep.
Rich Burton, Steve Roberts, Cameron Aldis, Dave Roberts, and the team. They opened my eyes to some pretty cool stuff. People looking to get back into insurance, and I think these guys do it really well. But they really lean in when it comes to showing appreciation, respect, and building relationship with the underwriters and BDMs. You got to remember, this is a partnership. At times, it might feel like an us and them, but you got to sway away from that way of thinking, because at the end of the day, we're all trying to achieve the same thing, which is getting insurance and coverage for the client.
Yep.
The insurer's got to manage their risk and they've got to manage a sustainable book. The advisor's role is obviously to get the client the best deal. But those guys, they ran a Christmas in July function, and they do it consistently every year. I think it's something Dave founded way back when, and they invite all their underwriters along and their BDMs along, and it's a show of appreciation. They put it on for them, and they love it. And it's just it always resonates. It hits home really well, and you can just see the community they've got and partnerships they've got with those insurance partners is just, it's awesome.
Mate, I think, yeah, honey and stick, or carrot and stick, the carrot definitely is a lot better. And I'd strongly encourage, you know, all the listeners is if you can reach out to your underwriter or your BDM, do say thank you, make sure there's a Christmas message, or, you know, take them out for lunch, whatever it may be, because that individual relationship building goes a long way towards making a better outcome for your client.
Yeah, equally so, an entirety of life. I mean, collectively as a group, Acumen PFS Fortnum and the Alliances business, I think we represent about 1.1, 1.2 billion.
That is huge.
And
wow.
I think it's about 24 mil of new business collectively written. Look, the 24 mil feels lowish, but I know in the network there's a range of what I'd call the doers, the dabblers, and the guys that don't do it. Now, the doers are probably doing 1 to 3 a week, and dabblers are probably doing that either a month or a quarter, and the guys that don't do it are actively disengaged. We know that there's opportunity, latent opportunity in the group to drive that those numbers up and push more insurance advice through our advisors, and also doing it for them through an entirety life. But we also feel like with that scale, we should get a better seat at the table with our insurers. And I think it'll be exploring those conversations over the next 6 and 12 months, seeing how we can collectively work with our insurance partners to get our advisors better access to priority service, access to better terms, access to maybe better premiums. I don't know, but I think premiums are one thing. I think that moves in. I think the thing that moves the needle for advisors is, don't worry about the premium so much. It's important to the client, but what's going to make it easier for us to do business and get business through? We need the insurers to be sustainable, but I feel like that probably sits more in taking friction out of the process. Make it easier for us to do business with you when it comes to pre-assessment. Turn it around faster. Give us the tools to get you the information you need. Have client portals so that we've got portals we can upload the information to securely, so we're protecting our clients' data, and keep us informed. Like,
That's a really good parting shot. Just letting you know, the insurers, we're coming for you.
we want to work with them, and we have a great. I think we've got a fairly good relationship with all of them. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see what the year brings. It's all new, right? So I've worked with advisors. I haven't worked as closely with the insurers. I know Rob McNeil, Kylie, and Nick Blendell. Those guys I used to work with at ANZ. They're legends. So I've got good confidence that we'll work with them collectively to solve the industry's issues and try and build some positive momentum in this space. But equally so, we're in the corner of advisors, and we want to drive home the need for advice and build that momentum. The insurers are aligned. I'm sure they are.
Yeah. Well, mate, it's been an absolute pleasure to be sitting across from you, because effectively you're in the driving seat of one of the few organizations that can genuinely move the needle on life insurance, mate. So thank you so much for coming on board and having the conversation.
Thank you, Ben. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I appreciate you having me here today and not taking too many pot shots at me. But
I wasn't going to mention your hairline, but something about glass houses.
Yeti Munster.
Yeah. Yeah. For those of you who don't know, please just look it up and then look at Aaron, and you'll see exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, it's not receding, it's a widow's peak.
Right. Thanks, mate.
Thank you. Cheers.